Right, our last set of PowerPoints for the day. Andy Linton, would you like to come up, please? Andy's going to talk a little bit more about the tertiary resources that are available around the country. He's also going to leave us with a few questions, I think, as well. And he has a couple of areas that he'd like to explore with yourselves. Andy has had over 25 years of experience in internet networking. He's had experience as a researcher and programmer in universities at Newcastle and also more recently at Victoria University. He's also worked with a number of ISPs and telcos such as Arnet, Connect.com, Telstra, Telecom and CityLink. So he's had a wide range of experience, and as you might have noticed during the day, he's very much involved also in a lot of the international activities, and some of his questions are going to relate to that today. Andy, thank you very much indeed. And welcome.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here, like everybody else. And I'm guessing that most of you are really pleased we're getting to the end, and it's Friday afternoon, and we're all going to have a beer after this, so that'll be kind of good too. I got a little bit worried when I saw the slides breaking down and the thing, so I have a backup plan here just in case. I'm going to talk about IPv6 in university courses, and this material is stuff that we've based on a very quick survey that we did around the universities. Now, I don't want to imply that Canterbury and Lincoln and AUT aren't doing anything here, but these are where we got responses from. So we got responses from Auckland, Waikato, Massey, Victoria and Otago, and I've listed them in north to south order rather than any other sort of ranking order. That's the logic for that. I think it's very fair to say that the responses we got and the actual sort of pieces of email we got from the various universities are at the end of these slides, but I'm not going to present them now. So when you get these slides as part of the material, you'll be able to go look at a little bit more detail. But I think it's fairly fair to say that all the universities are doing something on this. And based on the quick survey, what we were able to do was get the subject headings that they're talking about. So I think your mileage may vary. If you go to Auckland, they may be doing a little bit more of this or a little bit less of that. If you go to Waikato and so on and so on. I'm working currently at Victoria in the new School of Engineering and Computer Science. There's my sort of bit of commercial plug. Our work on this is relatively new, and it's work that's in progress and under development, and some of the other universities are probably at different stages of that development. So certainly in years 3 and 4, which is where most of the work is done on this, we're all the campuses are talking about IPv4 address depletion. We talk about address allocation and management. Now, in all these courses, this isn't people doing a years 3 and 4. They're not spending 2 years doing the detailed work that engineers do every day on if they're working in a commercial enterprise or an ISP or a large corporate. They're not sitting here working with routers and switches and so on every day, 5 days a week and so on, or 7 days a week probably in more cases. What they are doing is getting a course which has some aspect of this. So there is work done here, and there are principles explained, but in a lot of cases, people don't have real practical experience of using this stuff. So I say that you know, you need to be careful that you don't judge that all the engineers who are going to come out of university or computer science graduates know this stuff back to front, inside out, in the way that people who are experienced professionals do. But they are getting an introduction to this stuff. We also talk about the IPv6 overview, and we do comparisons with IPv4. So we do that at the level of, here's what the protocol stack looks like, here's what the other protocol stacks looks like, and look, this one's longer, this one's shorter, this one's got these things, these ones have got the other things. We also talk about, people have talked as we've gone on today about some of the new things you can do with V6 that you couldn't do with V4. So we talk about those header extensions, the things that allow IPsec and the flows and fragmentation and so on. And we talk about deployment issues. Now, we talk about NATs, and we try and compare NAT and IPv6. I think it's probably fair to say that we still spend more time on NAT in our courses, explaining it and going through the whole thing about how the packets map matching. I know, than we do about the V6 stuff. You know, I think it's really important to remember that when RFC 1918 was introduced, it was a temporary measure to get us over the hurdle of IPv4 address depletion. And now we're still at the point where we've gone down this, you know, devil technology, because that's what it is, and we're saying, oh, but it's fantastic. You know, it was a quick, cheap, dirty hack to get us over that problem until V6 was ready. So, you know, that's what you bought when you bought NAT. Now's the time to say, now we're going to retire that, because it's not the way to do things. I say that the only RFC that my name appears in is in the comments section of RFC 1918, and I wish it wasn't there. You know? Okay?
Branded,
yeah. It's my fault. You know? No, it's not. No, but anyway. And we also talk some stuff about tunneling and routing. And certainly we're doing more work on actually getting people to sit down and do routing with routers rather than just do simulators and talk about, well, you know, your packets get pushed over here and draw little sort of pictures and so on. We're trying to get people to do that. I'll give an example of some of the stuff that we're working on. I have third-year students who are going to do a project immediately after the semester break, which comes up over the next 2 weeks. And they're going to write a packet sniffer. They're going to sit down and look at the Ethernet and try and decode what the Ethernet header looks like, what the IP header looks like, and what the TCP header and UDP headers look like on top of that. Now, one group of the students is going to be doing that only for IPv4, and another group who complained that some of the stuff they were doing wasn't hard enough or they weren't getting enough points are going to get to do V6. And the fascinating thing is I've sat down and written that code so that I know how it works and so on over the last few weeks. And, you know, you come down and you've got your Ethernet, you find the IP header and whether it's 4 or 6. And then you come down underneath and you find the same old TCP header. So, you know, there's just that one slice in there. And I hand wave a little bit because there's a few extra headers that can slot in there. But it's really not that much different once you understand how it all fits together. So that's the sort of work we're doing. I can move the slide. That's even better. Yeah. We've got some graduate research going on. It's limited to a few students. Most of the universities have a dual stack test bed, or in a number of the cases are actually running dual stack. Brian Carpenter had these two lines in, and I'm not quite sure I know what the Planet Lab is. So did he explain yesterday? So somebody tell us. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So I should have checked that out, and I sort of realized when I got to talk about it, I went, what's this? Anyway. Okay. Here's the stuff I think is important rather than what we're doing now. So what should we be doing? And in the same way as what should you be doing? Should we use IPv6 as the default protocol stack in our teaching? What we tend to do at the moment is we go IPv4. Oh, and by the way, kids, this IPv4 space is running out, so there's this IPv6 thing that's coming along somewhere in the future, and by the time you get out into industry, you're going to have to deal with that, but see you later. You know, that's sort of been the stance up till now. We're getting better at that. Should we turn this the other way around? Should we say every example is IPv6 and say, oh, and IPv4 is left as an exercise for the reader? Or Dean shaking his head, and should we be going, here's how you do this. You do it with IPv4, you do it with IPv6, and you're going to have to do both. Now, you know, we've talked today about the idea of transition to IPv6. I really think you should get that out of your head. This isn't about a transition to IPv6. You know, you can tell I'm going to be out of this before this is a problem for me, and it's like sort of a number of other people have said today, it's not going to be my problem. I'll be prepared to take small amounts of money, probably beer bets, you know, that in 10 years' time, people will still be saying, and our dual stack network does this? Because I think it's going to go on for a very long time, the V4 network. I don't think it's going to be, you know, in 2013 we'll switch the V4 one off. 2020 maybe, you know. So this is sort of like planning for greenhouse gases and carbon credits and all that other stuff. It's that long-term thing that we've got to get our heads around, that we're going to run dual stack. A number of the older people here have also said, you know, we used to run with dual stack or triple stack or quadruple stack networks, and we just went, yeah, sure, okay. Yeah. I started in the universities in the UK, and we ran coloured book protocols, and we wrote our own protocols, and we ran TCP/IP, and we ran XNS, which is a thing from Xerox, which predated IPX, but was roughly the same as IPX. And so, you know, and we had all these different address schemes, and we got on with it. And there'll be people here who have run DECnet and IP and SNA and this and that. Now, it would be, a perfect world would be lovely if you only had to think about one, but I don't think it's that hard to think about the two. And that's, you know, that's the stuff we've got to get ready for. Okay, so I suppose this second point down here is the training thing again. I mean, I wouldn't be doing my job if I'm working for the university and not talking about training, because, you know, that's what we do, you know, and so on. But there was a recent survey by ARIN, which is the Regional Internet Registry in the US, in CADA. They came up with a survey which talked about the number of the things that were barriers to IPv6 deployment. The second biggest one at 44% was lack of IPv6 expertise. And the one that was above that was making sure you had the protocols on your routers and so on. And then there were a number of other sort of things that were stopping people. So I don't think I can emphasize this enough, and I'm really glad that everybody else has been emphasizing this. This is about not just about hiring graduates. It's about the training of your people that are there and working out how we're going to get them to the point where they aren't phased and aren't worried. Last month I went to a PACNOG, Pacific Network Operators Group meeting, and there's a guy called Philip Smith who does a lot of training for Cisco. Philip came and sat these guys down and said, we're going to build a BGP sort of fabric for ISP, and we're going to do it for IP version 4, and we did that. And then he said, now we're going to do it for IP version 6, and he structured his IP version 4 network so that he said, now all you do is put this line in for the V6 and then this line for the V6 and map that out that way. If you've got your V4 network laid out properly, and this is a fantastic opportunity to lay out your V4 network properly. Mike, who's here, used to work at the university, as I did many years ago, and we now have a network that has evolved, got stretched and pushed and pulled about in such ways that I really would not like to use that as a design basis for our current, for our new network, for the V6 though. But that's a real opportunity for us to do that proper refresh and that recycle. I put this number down in here. People have talked about various dates. This is my date for it. And the way I got this date was on the front of the ipv6.org.nz site, there is a little calculator that currently runs down numbers. It says there's 10% of the address space left, and you see this counter going tick, 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 as they're going out the door like this, right? And it has a number of days on it. And I just checked it just before I came up, and it was 696 days. Now, that has actually gone up a little bit since 3 days ago, because the rate's sort of doing this thing. And 696 days, I would like them to actually put a date in here, you know. So I went and calculated it the other day, and it came out to the 4th of July 2011. Now, for us at the university, if we're going to do a massive restructure of IPv6 teaching, it's really close. We've got one full year, and you know, we've got 3 semesters to work on this. And the chances are of us having rewritten all our courses for the start of 2010 is not particularly high. And the other problem we have, and the other problem that you may well have, is where do we find an IPv6 textbook? Because they're all written in IPv4. So there's another thing that isn't IPv6 capable or compliant. There's an opportunity there. Somebody wants to write a textbook, I think. Yeah? The one book that I have found and I will recommend to you is one of those O'Reilly books, one called IPv6 Essentials. It's very readable, and it's, you know, a good place to start with. So those are my... Yeah. You've seen the movie, you know. Woof. Yeah. It did strike me that, Nathan. It was sort of a... Yeah. Okay. So those are the things I think in the training side, and perhaps some other sort of thoughts, haven't been around this thing for a while. I'm happy to do some questions. I've got some questions for you, and I've got another set of slides that I want to talk about. There's been some discussion today about getting IPv6 address space. On Monday morning, I'm going to Beijing to the APNIC meeting, and we have some policy stuff on the table about making IPv6 address space easier. So I'm keen to get a little bit of feedback out of you people. So instead of you asking me, I'm going to... Yeah. So there's that other set of slides, if we can pop those up. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, I think so. Okay. All right. So, for people here, unless you're part of some major multinational organisation that's driven from outside our region, the place you go to get IPv6 addresses is from APNIC. I'd like to ask how many people here are actually members of APNIC. Yeah. How many people here have got the old? Have had address space for so long that they have what's called a historic allocation. So many people got their addresses from John Postel. Yeah. So, or, you know, going back that sort of length of time. Yeah. So there's some stuff in here about people have blocks of addresses and so on. Two questions. Anybody prepared to sort of stick their head above the ramparts and say what they think this costs? So /22 is the standard allocation for a small service provider of IPv4, so that's about 1,000 addresses, and that's the minimum block. How much would that cost you a year? Anybody got any? The numbers here, I'll give you these numbers and then we can sort of, it's maybe just worth thinking about. Up till now, a /22 will have cost you about $3,000. If you wanted to go to a /32 of IPv6, which is a truckload of address space by any measures.
Truckload times a truckload.
It is, yeah. It's two truck, no.
Truckload squared.
Truckload squared, all right. Yeah. It's a lot of space. That would have pushed your bill up. It would have taken you to the next tier. The Executive Committee of APNIC have restructured the prices. The top line will cost you, from next year onwards, will cost you $1,900 a year, which is for 1,000 addresses, and I don't even know how many is the bottom one, and it will cost you exactly the same. So the cost of the V6 space is going down. So that's something that's worth having to think about. Now, I don't know if I can make this go to the next slide or not, because this isn't... Oh, I can't. Okay. To get space, we had Glenn talking about how hard it was, and, you know, he had to sort of jump through hoops backwards, and then he had to pretend he was... Oh, no, he actually was from a university, but... Right. These are the criteria for getting that /32. Right now. So you've got to be an LIR. Many people know what an LIR is. Yeah. Okay, when you translate APNIC speak into ISP, into, you know, ordinary people speak, that says ISP, an internet service provider, roughly. They have some other criteria. They say you haven't to be an end site. Many people, you have to plan to provide IPv6 connectivity to organizations. So this is really talking about somebody being like a big telco or a big ISP and so on. And then there's a second set of slides, which is you have to have a plan for making at least 200 assignments to other organizations within 2 years, or you have to be an existing, you know, this is really complicated. There's a bizarre piece of stuff going on in the policy framework at APNIC, and I'm guessing it's pretty much the same in the other RARs. We have a resource that's really restricted in its availability. It's running out. It's plus or minus 12 to 18 months before it expires. And the conditions for getting IPv4 addresses are actually easier than this. So there's clearly something wrong. So that's a thought that you maybe want to... How many people here have tried to get IPv6 space but have not been successful? We've got one down there, all right. So did you not know how to answer these questions? I mean, the trick with these is if you really need to answer these questions, then just answer them. I have a plan to go to Mars next week. Yeah. And I think the other one here is that you should use the New Zealand definition of ISP as enshrined in Section 92A. It's anybody who provides downlink stream connectivity to anybody, you become an ISP. Okay? So, but the reason I'm talking about this is, Murray's going to chase me, I know. We have a policy initiative to go in front of AP NIC next week at the meeting, at the policy SIG, which will actually say to AP NIC, go off and look at all the AP NIC members who do not have an IPv6 address and allocate them one, and contact them and say, all you have to do is come along, log into the MyAPNIC website and say, yes, please, I'd like my IPv6 allocation. So the thing I'm really pushing you here is, one of the things you've been told is you need to go off and get IPv6 address space. I think within the next month or two, if you can't do that, you really are being slack and you really aren't taking this seriously. It was going to get much, much easier to get that space. So I encourage you to sort of do that, those of you who are members, and even join in. It's going to get a lot cheaper next year anyway. And after we go to Beijing, we have the discussions at the SIG, and then we come back out to the mailing list for a final call. So it would be really important if anybody who's on that list or anybody who knows how to get on that list, I mean, you can talk to me, get on there and say, this is really important to us. We need to be able to get this thing easily. And this gets that barrier of the techs having to go to their manager and say, can I have $3,000 for this address space? Well, what's it for? You know, that one that Dean talked about. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much indeed, Andy. Very much appreciated.